Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It is 4:30, so we will go ahead and if everybody would take their seats, we'll go ahead and get started here in just a moment. Dave is out of town. Yeah, we would like to excuse Dave. He is out of town today, so he will not be able to join us. But thank you, all the board members and district faculty and staff, for joining us, as well as all of you from the schools. It's great to have you in our work meeting. We'll go ahead and call our meeting to order, and we will start with a prayer or thought by Tiffany, after which Michelle will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we are so grateful to meet as a board today and with our community members here, and we are grateful to Thee for Thy guidance and for Thy inspiration. We are grateful for the children and for staff and faculty and administration that make Iron County so such a great place to grow up and learn. And we ask Thee to bless us with Thy guidance and help us to make good decisions and to work well with each other and find the best solutions for our kids. And we say these in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the prayer and for the pledge. At this time, we will now go into our training. We're still working through our master board certification, so we'll turn some time over to you, Superintendent.
Okay, thank you. If you'll go to that section, you'll see one of the, well, first of all, I have the Board Master Certification PDF listed there. And for example, if you go under the second column and you look under, underneath accountability, in the second column, there is one of those. We're supposed to do the required plus three more, and one of those is to review the website and make sure that we have everything that we're supposed to have there according to the open meetings law. And I've pulled all of the things from the open meeting law that we're supposed to have on the website, and I just thought it would be good for us to review, make sure that we have those things. First of all, does anyone know where we would go? The first item there is meeting schedule and notices of closed meetings. Does anyone know where we would go from the website
to get there? School board, I know you can get it from school board.
Okay, you go to school board.
Because that's where I go.
And then what? Meeting agendas and minutes. And that takes you to board docs, where you can find all things policy and meeting and everything. So the schedule is listed right there.
The schedule is also listed on a separate
link, too. I don't know. I've never gone to a separate link. So if I go to board meeting schedule 2024, uh-huh. It takes me to a different place? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I didn't know. I assumed it went back to board docs. The other things listed are, so we have the meeting agendas are right there in board docs. Do you know how to get to the minutes? So it's going to take you to board docs. And let's say we wanted the minutes from our last meeting. What I meant was the minutes from our August 20th meeting. No, is that one not either?
July.
I was going to mention July in the July meeting. If you look at the July 23rd board workshop regular meeting. Oh, it doesn't look the same. That's right. So it just says view minutes, but you can go there to see the minutes, and anyone can go there and see the minutes.
Yep.
Okay. The other item on here, I guess now I've got a... Thank you. So now I've got to go back to
And thanks
the
for watching him.
Agenda.
So he didn't erase all of the minutes from our last. Yes. Good job keeping an eye.
Okay. So the other things are the recordings, audio recordings, video recordings. And again, you can get to the video by going to school board, and then there's the board meeting video stream. So that's listed on there. The other one is public participation information. Each of the agendas has information about the public comment and how to do that and the expectations there. Then we have board member information. And we can go to board members. And that's where we have your email addresses and your names, your lovely pictures. District's budget information. So this one, I'm not sure that getting there from the school board is the fastest. You can, because it's in the meeting. It's in meetings that we've had, right? But you'd have to know which meeting. So actually the fastest way to get to those is to go to departments and then finance. So it's really just two clicks, departments and finance. And then you have budgets, you have financial reports and financial statements. All of that information just right there. Another one is the Utah Public Notice website link. And that one, to get to that one, you go to school board and then general board information. And then board meeting audio transcripts. That takes you to the public meeting website. Oh, there's the public meeting, public notice website. I wonder if we should change that name, though. Because it really probably should say public notice website. Thank you, Shauna. Another one is, the last one is the closed meeting expectations. And that's in the same place under general board information at the bottom of that page. Is just the legal reasons for holding a closed session. And those are all the reasons that we have listed in the agenda. So by reviewing that and just verifying that we have all of those things available on our website, is it allows us to check that box for the board master award, the master board certification.
I just want to mention how grateful I am that the majority of all this critical information is usually not more than two clicks away for the public. It is immediately accessible. Maybe there are a few things that are three clicks, But the majority, I mean, it's very intuitive. It's a very accessible website. So I just, you know, want to, whoever's done that, thank them, because sometimes websites are not fun to navigate.
And sometimes we do have people that will contact us and say, I'm having a hard time, and it's just so easy to point them to the right spot, and then they've got what they need real quick. So we do encourage anyone who may be having trouble finding what they're looking for to contact us, email us. We can send them a link right to what they're looking for.
Okay, thank you. And it's great to be able to go through our master board training, make sure that we're keeping up to date on all of these things. So thank you for the efforts there, Superintendent.
I have to ask just quickly.
Yeah.
Only because I see that Megan has she's filling out as apparently an overachiever.
No.
Apparently. All the boxes.
I'm just not going to that training
without my star next to me. So I'm wondering, Monica, is someone keeping track of this for us other than us? Are we going to, will a report be sent to the board that this board is finally stepping up? Because I remember being a little bit embarrassed that there were all these awards that went out in January and I didn't even know what they were talking about. And that's probably on me, but is this something we should be individually tracking?
Yeah, we can. Individually tracking. But that's a great idea. I think we can pull together the information that we have put forward on the training so everybody is aware and remembers those training specific. We're going through them step by step so that we can hit the mark there. But yeah, we can make sure that everybody remembers those trainings that we've got to.
Yeah, if we can just remind us which ones we've done. That's
absolutely
terrible to say.
Yeah.
But and I think because when we started this, the website was down,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
they were redoing it, and we started off super strong, and then the website went down, and we were all kind of not sure. So if we could maybe just get a list, can that be an action to get a
so
list?
You so you can go back to your, we showed you how to get back into the meeting mm-hmm. minutes from the yeah. prior meeting.
No,
not
funny.
We could look it up and get that for you.
Yeah, we'll do that. What we'll do, we can come actually prepared with something for each of you so that we can keep track of that. We can even have that online so that it's easy to see. You can pull it up anytime. So I can work on that.
And then just to be clear, and then we'll go in individually and prove that we've done those and and do it on the master board certification.
And submit it on the certification,
Is it there an app?
Because I think a couple of us have 2 years to do really soon.
And you do have to actually get credit for it, you do have to log into their mm-hmm. system and enter the information. But we can compile all of that for you so that it's easy.
That would be great.
And this is done yearly, is that correct?
Correct.
Every year we get this award and we go through the trainings.
Okay, thank you. All right, we will go ahead and move to Section C on our agenda, and this is information and discussion items. The first item that we have is our school improvement plans.
Yes, and the order is just the same that's on the agenda. So we'd like to start out with Canyon View High School, and then East Elementary, E-Valley, and then Enoch, and then Fiddler's. And then we will have three more of these next week, and that will conclude all of the schools. So we will have heard all of them by then.
Okay, Canning View.
Do we have the, can we pass one of those microphones over here for these guys?
There you go.
Could you sing to test it?
No.
Where is it?
Let's see if I can
do
it from
the first one. All right.
Okay, so I'm sure at this point you guys have are aware of the process and how this lays out. So let's just talk about our goals, and then you stop me and ask questions as needed. Our academic goals, we have one in language arts and in math. We want to raise our scores. Our ninth grade Aspire is our high school end of level test. In our ninth grade, they're at 30. We want to raise those to 35, and that is the percentage proficient. You have the scale of 1 to 4. Our 3s and 4s, we want to raise to be at least 35. In 10th grade, we're at 45, and we'd like to raise that to 50. So, and how will we do that? These things I'm going to share with you, these things that we want to, the action steps, essentially, that we're going to do, these came from the teachers in our departments. They're working with the middle schools to talk about incoming freshmen. We're going to have to use common formative and summative assessments to figure out what our kids need and to get that for them. You may have heard about Performance Matters, which is a module that's been added to PowerSchool. We have given one of those in English already. It's new, and we're figuring out some of the glitches in it, but we like it because it allows us to have that data, and once we've been doing it for a while and the middle school has, it'll be longitudinal as well, and we'll be able to identify student progress and things that we need to know about. And then based on that, we want to do some targeted interventions. And the same with math. We need to raise those scores. We want to bring our math Aspire up to 30% proficient and in both math and or in 9th and 10th grade. With math, they also want to be able to drill down and identify why students are struggling. If a student isn't attending enough, that's a different intervention than if a student has been there, been present for the instruction, and still is not making the progress that they would hope for. And they've identified the performance matters throughout the year. They've given at least one, and some of them are even have even done more. So that's our academic goal. For behavior, one of the things that we switched a year ago is to not identify like numbers of infractions and incidents versus office referrals and things like that, but rather to try and highlight the positive. Last year, we were able to recognize 69% of our students for a positive academic or behavioral reason. This year, we want to recognize 80% of our students. And actually, one of the hardest things to do is to track this, because there's recognitions going on from the classroom level all the way across to the students that you see appear at board meeting for some very special and high-level recognitions. And some of the things that we want to do, and I think this is a really great idea, Sarah Morton, our Dean of Students, helps out a lot with our positive behavior program. And so one of the things that we want to do is print out a label, a list of labels with all of our students' names and addresses on it. And then at every faculty meeting, teachers can come and grab a couple of those address labels and use that to send home a positive feedback to those students. And then we'll be able to see just by the numbers who hasn't been recognized in that way. And then the other things we want to do is to have a master recognition document that helps us track what's been recognized. I mean, things like a no tardy party, for instance. We'll give out a cookie. It might sound silly, but it's funny how much kids notice that. And then in our flex classes, too, to call those kids out when they've had that positive recognition in the smaller group as well. It's funny. I knew they would like it, but I've been, even as we've done that, I've been surprised at how much teenagers enjoy that. So pretty cool. And that's so we'll want to do that for 80%. Our instructional goal that we chose, we want to implement at least two group discussion strategies, because our evidence-based instructional strategy is to properly implement and document classroom discussions, everything from, like a think, pair, share to a Socratic seminar in some of our classes. And we'll do that through our quarterly, we'll do a quarterly survey that will coincide with our professional development days, and also do some talk about it in our faculty meetings to see how we're doing, what the ups and downs are. That's going to need some support. We've been working with our instructional coach. We'll do in our faculty meetings, we do mini lessons, talk about how to do that, and then also talk about some what's gone well, what hasn't gone well, and try to figure out as we do it what the teachers are enjoying doing and what's harder to do. The reason I say that is because classroom discretion lends itself well in, say, a sociology classroom. You do a Socratic seminar, have kids, it's pretty natural. It's not as easy to do, say, in a PE class or in a Woods class, but if we're going to do that, we want to do it across the board, and that's the reason for the additional instruction, the way to support our teachers as they try to meet that goal. So That's our academic, behavioral, and instructional goal for this year.
Danny?
Yes, sir.
On the English and on the math here, currently ninth grade, it says Aspire scores 30%. Does that equate that they're proficient? What does that mean?
That's the percentage of everyone who's tested who gets a 3 or a 4 on that scaled score. And 4 is highly proficient, 3 is proficient, 2 is approaching, and a 1 is not proficient.
Well, that, I think we're all kind of looking at this because we're not familiar with that, and we're thinking only 30% of the students are at grade level.
That's not grade level. That's the state proficient. It's a separate thing. And those are not as high as we'd want them to be. Those aren't terrible scores, unfortunately. And the other thing we did is we went in and figured out what the cut scores were. And we have a whole bunch of kids that are right there within an answer or two correct on their end of level test of moving into the 3 category. They're somewhat artificial, but they also were important to us because this is how we get rated. Your board goal of having us be at a certain percentile rank or rank order among other districts. If we're going to move up to be the ninth ranked district in the state in math proficiency, that means we've got to bump ours up a couple of times over the next couple of years as well.
So these goals will correlate and get us to our district goals.
Okay. Yep.
This just doesn't, for us not sitting in it, this doesn't translate for us very well.
Okay, so maybe I could speak to that a little bit. So as we're writing these goals, you didn't have your goals written yet all the way, but we were able to look. I know what Superintendent Hatch told us, and we were able to look at previous goals and the things he's talking about. So we have that discussion in relationship to where we are and what we want to accomplish. So I think you'll find that those goals all align with one or more district goals.
Okay, thank you.
Danny, a question again.
Yes, sir.
So Canyonview High School.
Yes, sir.
Do we know the percent of students that are considered proficient in English and math overall the whole school?
Well, so that's going to be 9th and 10th graders because there's not, those are the levels that are rated in that way. And so I can say who is in English and I can say who is in math. I don't know how those correlate. And I'm guessing quite a few, there'll be some overlap of the kids that are proficient in English are likely to be proficient in math as well. So right now, based on that, those that are at a 3 or a 4 in language arts last year in 9th grade, 30% were proficient. And in our 10th grade, it was 45% that were at a 3 or a 4.
Okay. And in the math area, 26 were proficient?
26 and 30. Or 26 and 22, sorry, I misspoke.
Do any of these kids have math every day?
Yes, they do. The 9th and 10th grade all have math every day.
They meet on a daily basis, so
yep.
They've...
And so those actually have gone down a little bit over the last year, and so that's a pretty concerning thing for us. We'll be watching that one with quite a lot of interest and attention, and we've had some pretty direct discussions about it because there could be a lot of reasons. We can't control all that. What we can control is we have those kids throughout the day. We can control how we test them and what we teach them and how we monitor if they're learning or not.
And if they meet every day, when they meet every day, are they meeting 75 minutes every day?
So on a regular day, I believe it's 77.
Okay.
And then on Friday, it's 44, I believe.
Yeah, but the other days are 77 mm-hmm. minutes a day.
So they're getting lots of math instruction.
Yeah.
So then we have to figure out. So then let me just tell you a little bit about the discussion we had when we were talking about this. I don't believe our kids are dumb. I don't believe our teachers are poor or they got poor from one year to the next.
Yeah.
So it's something else. What is it? And as we looked at that, it is being able to identify where they are with the content that's been covered and determining what they did or didn't learn so that we can make sure that they did get it. And the other part is making sure that what we're teaching is the stuff that we're expected, that they're expected to be able to show proficiency on at the end of the year. And so that's kind of the approach we took.
But one thing I'm excited about with where they're going is what it says there in the second bullet in math on the right. It just says track student proficiency using formative assessments and performance matters throughout the year. This is something that they haven't been able to do in the past. and now they can, and they can give the same assessments, they can, and they can analyze that data, and I think that's going to really help them to do exactly what Mr. Heaton is saying, to identify where those gaps are and then address them.
My goal is that if when they take the end of level test, there should be no surprise. We should know quite accurately how many students we're going to have proficient or not based on the assessments we've done throughout the year, so we know where they are.
But they are meeting all year long, every day in math. They have every day.
Yep, that's a really critical thing for us. Without that, we would really struggle, I think, and we did prior to having double blocking. Those proficiency levels, now granted, we've gone through different iterations of tests, but prior to double blocking, we were in single digits on proficiency levels.
Hey, Danny, on these tests, you know, as the students are going through these, and this is getting down in the weeds a little bit, so I apologize, I just am noticing a trend that's out there at the university even. When they're not proficient in math, are they identified the areas that they're lacking in, or are they simply said, you're not proficient in math?
So not immediately, but after a while we get some information that helps us understand, but it gives us general conceptual areas where they didn't do as well, and it'll say like number sense and solving quadratic equations, for instance, and it'll tell you how they did on that. But it's basically, it rolls things together, and it's hard to say, well, they missed this thing. And so basically the teachers have to go in and look and see, okay, what was tested, how does that test? And it should overlay with the core, and it does. And then they can say, okay, what are we doing? That's why performance matters is important, or something that can do that. So you can say, okay, we can see that the kids with multi-step factoring, they're struggling. We need to go back and talk more about that and figure out what they're struggling with ahead of time so that they know it by the end of the year, rather than moving on and leaving a hole that will show up only with that test, because then it's too late to fix it.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, that's a kind of an autopsy rather than something you can work with.
Yeah, well, and that's one thing I'm noticing is, like, at the university, to do construction management, you have to do calculus. And so we'll encourage students to enter that program, and they're like, I'm not good at math. And it's just the mentality. I'm hearing that more and more and more from students. Well, I'm not good at math. So it's something, whether it's the testing, it's something that's happening as they're going through, whether it's only 30% of the kids are proficient, that means they're good at math and the others are not. What, you know, that's a concern as we're going through this. And, you know, even as we're evaluating our goals and things and the terminology that we use, we don't want to make a kid feel like that they're not good at math. What are the skills that they're missing? And then how do we find those to help them moving forward? Because the majority of those kids, once they get understanding what they're missing, they get that little missing link, they get that to click, they are actually really good.
And so, I think the psychological part is that it's not that you're good or not at math, it's that when it comes right down and being able to tell a kid specifically, yeah, you weren't good at this yet, but let's go back over it and you will be good at it. And kids respond really well when they can see in real time their progress. So
yeah,
that's always, that to me, that's one of the most powerful things to address what you just mentioned, is showing a kid, no, you're fine. You just didn't know how to do this. We'll show you how to do it, and then you can do it.
One other thing. You mentioned that when you had not double-blocked the kids, they were in single proficiency digits. I'll just bring this up. And you know this woman probably because she taught at Cedar High for a while. And I don't know if Vicki Heaton was there when you were there or not. She was the department head. And you double blocked your people, and you brought some things up there. And Vicki specifically, you know, she was concerned that we went on the every other day block schedule. Mm-hmm. Math was going to be hurt, and it obviously was hurt because you've double blocked now, and you've improved that. Mm-hmm. So there's something to having math every day,
especially for kids that haven't been successful at math. It's very helpful, in my opinion. All right.
Okay, thank you, Danny.
Who's next?
Danny.
We don't do math at East Elementary, so don't worry about those questions. For those that don't know me, I'm Mike Moyle. I'm the principal at East Elementary. And right here, she'll wave. This is our assistant principal, Shannon Hinman. It's a pleasure to be here. So our goals are very much aligned with the district's goals. You'll see some of them are, you'll recognize some almost word for word. With language arts and math, we really wanted to focus on improvement for kindergarten through second grade. Third through fifth, of course, has the RISE assessment. Of course, there are many assessments, but that's the big one. But we're really focusing on typical or better progress in reading and also typical or better progress in math. The reason we feel that is will be helpful for us is we feel like if the kids are progressing at least a year's amount of growth or more, the testing will take care of itself. With third through fifth, like I said, we do have the RISE, so we want to have the kids be proficient for language arts 55% and for math 70%. You'll see there's quite a big difference there. We've historically done quite a bit better in mathematics, so that's why that one is so much higher. We've made literacy our focus, and I think that is a main focus of our district as well. So we're hoping to bring that one up just as high. As far as how we want to accomplish that, we want to align our class rigor with end-of-level assessments. What we find is sometimes a kid will do quite well in class. They seem to be acing everything, and at the end of the year, they get a 2, which is not passing, not proficient. Something that's helping us with that is iReady in mathematics. We don't necessarily have the same thing in language arts. But iReady is quite well aligned with RISE, and so we're going to watch that closely. We're going to regularly report on progression for all students. We actually set up our system to have our PLC meetings so that we're all in two rooms that are connected to each other. For those that know East, where the reading condo is, that's where we're holding our PLC meetings. So it's kind of nice the administrators and our instructional coach can go around to all of the meetings and talk about these things. We're going to track upper grades in comprehension progress. We haven't necessarily done that in the past. We focused on, last year we focused on fluency and accuracy. This year we want to focus on the bigger picture, which is comprehension. We feel like that is the bigger bang for the buck. And then strengthen focus on standards-based learning outcomes. So rather than focusing on what they learn just from the curriculum, we want them to learn the standards so that at the end of the year they can actually answer questions that are asked, standard-based questions. It's quite similar if you'll look at the first top right boxes. We want to do quite a bit of the same with language arts and math. Rigor was probably the word that I heard the most in our planning session and in what we felt we needed to improve our learning outcomes, so we're focusing on that for both things. For behavior, everybody's favorite topic, this one we used to focus, like Denny was saying, we used to focus on things like referrals and stuff of that nature. We're trying to get away from those as well. This year, we rank our kids every year as they move from one grade to the next for basically making classes to make them equal as we can. And we thought, well, why don't we use these rankings and focus on how we can get kids to improve in that, especially our reds and yellows. Those are the kids we want to move the most. And so we have a PBIS SOAR incentive program. We have a SOAR store and SOAR bucks. So that's SOAR, not SORE, just to clarify. we realize there's a need to teach social skills for, I hate to say repeat offenders, that sounds bad, but we have students that need very basic skills. How to be honest, how not to steal stuff, how to sit on the rug, you know, how to deal with conflict on the playground. She's not letting me swing. Okay, how do you deal with that? So we are going to focus more on that with our wellness center and our social worker and counselor. The next one is create one-page behavior consequence flowchart. We do have that already, and what that is for is the teachers wanted something that was very clear, black and white, on, okay, a kid does an undesired behavior, how do I respond? If I'm in the classroom, how do I respond? If I'm in the lunchroom, if I'm in the gym? And so we did that for every area of our school, and it helps the teachers to, rather than tackle every situation as a novel situation, it's just a, okay, step one, step two, step three. It just helps the teachers to be a little more calm and confident in what they're doing. And then we have a teacher home positive communication plan. So every teacher has a positive communication plan with home. That's something that I could actually share with you guys. Each teacher just figured out, how do I communicate positive things, so it's not just, you know, Jimmy stole this Pokemon card. It's, hey, Jimmy got this Sorbuck, or Jimmy did this great thing at lunch today. And there's a lot of great things coming out of that. Even Shannon and I are doing that as administrators. So when kids, they can earn what's called a brag badge. For those, have y'all been in East? Okay. right along our wall to the cafeteria is where we have, every grade level has a spot, and the brag badges are little eagle heads of different colors, and the grade levels get to put those on. And then Shannon and I call home, and it's kind of funny when you call home, they're like, oh no, it's the principal. Like, hey, I'm calling for something good. Your son got a brag badge today, and so that's really fun. The kids eat it up, and we give them 10 sore bucks, and they get a sucker. So it's the kindergartners, especially when they come in, they just light up the room for that. That's a lot of fun. Our last one is instruction. We want 80% of our kids to be able to answer the question, how do you know when you are successful? We found that a lot of students just don't. They don't know that. Teachers will have reference walls. They'll have examples of things. But when you ask the child themselves, how do you know if when you're successful, they struggle to answer that question. The shorter they get, the harder that is. So we are going to create vertical alignment of success criteria for essential standards. And that basically just means from grade level, from kindergarten up, we're going to focus on certain essential standards and have clear success criteria, simply meaning when a kid can do this exact thing, that means they're successful. That will help us to communicate that to them. We're going to update collaborative meeting agendas to include discussion on success criteria, and then list best practices based on learning outcomes and success criteria. We found that when, all teams at East have four people. And so that's really helpful for us when we collaborate. And what we find is one class will always perform better than another. And one will always perform lower than another. And instead of saying, oh, I'm a good teacher and you're a bad teacher, it's what methods did you use? What strategies did you use? How did the kids take that? And we just have been building that one actually for a couple of years. And so each time they come around to teach a certain concept, we already have a list of what are the things that work the best. That's all I've got.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Just sounds a quick to me one. Like your teachers are doing what Harry Wong used to advocate, steal.
Beg, borrow, and steal. True that.
I'm just curious to know your second language population.
So native Spanish speakers? What about them do you want to know?
The percentage.
Oh, percentage. I think the last time I looked, it was 11%. I'd have to double check. Don't quote me on that. But I would love it if all the Spanish speakers in the district came to our school, because our goal with dual immersion is to have 50-50. So the ideal classroom would be 50% native Spanish speakers, 50% native English speakers. But I would say probably our biggest number in any class is like 6 kids that are native Spanish speakers.
And that was just out of curiosity, but I would share this with you. I have a new neighbor, new next-door neighbor in 5th grade, and I was out in my yard, and he and his mother passed by, and I had understood that he was in the dual immersion program at your school, so I thought I was going to be a smarty because I'm fluent in Spanish, and I busted out. And that little kid just he fell right in line. And I used a couple of words that he didn't understand, and he came back with, ¿Y cómo se dice eso en inglés? And so I cribbed him a little bit, but absolutely no compunction. No, he was completely confident. It was delightful because I, as you may not know, but I taught English and Spanish, and I'm a huge proponent of bilingual education, and he did you proud. Little
excellent.
River did you proud.
We'll have to give him a brag badge. You'll have to email me his name.
Yeah. He did great.
I have one question on the behavior. You said, it says create a one page. It sounds like you did that since the school, and I'm assuming you did it when the school year started.
Mm-hmm.
Those flow charts, have you been able to utilize those? Do you have any feedback? Like, is it working, or is that black and white flow chart model helping like you hoped, or is it too soon to know?
I think it's helping. I'm not sure it's to where I want it to be. Sometimes, you know, when your computer breaks, the first thing you do is you call the tech. You know, you don't even try anything. That can be how some people will respond to behavior. And so that's where I think we just need to keep remind. Oh, what's that? Did you do step one? Did you do step two? So there's still some encouragement and training to go there, but I think it's solid.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, there's a few faces I have not met, but my name is Allison Drake, and I'm the principal at Escalante Valley Elementary. Usually we're called E-Valley, so if you've heard that, that's not a different school, that's still us. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and jump on into this. So we also have 4 areas for setting goals. Our first one was in language arts. It says that we will increase our Acadians reading, formerly DIBELS. I often still refer to it as DIBELS out of habit. Scores and grades K through 6 from 57% proficiency at beginning of year to 68% proficiency by end of year. And how we plan to go about that is we will, which we already have, hired a math and reading interventionist using specific funding, TSSA and Trustland. We will assess our students beginning, middle, and end of year on the benchmark assessments for Acadians Reading, or DIBELS. In addition to that, we will also do progress monitoring. So our at-risk students receive progress monitoring twice a month, and then our students who are green or blue or on grade levels, they receive progress monitoring once a month. That's a minimum. And then we will also implement UFLY in 95% group. The UFLY, so we actually use Hegarty in our preschool. I should note that we are a preschool through 6th grade. But our preschool does use Hegarty, and then UFLY is used kindergarten through 1st grade, and 95% group is used in grades 2 through 4. Depending on the student's needs, though, we might adjust that. So, for example, we have two or three students in 3rd grade who are currently in the UFLY program because that's where their needs lie. It addresses more with fluency, decoding, and phonemic awareness. In addition to that, we're going to expand our decodable library, and we're changing up our baggy book system so that the levels that we send home are more on a Lexile level so that they match the students' needs even more so. And then our final area that we're going to work on, it says all teachers will receive literacy training and observations from Ashley Peterson, who many of you may know here at our district level. She's our literacy specialist and amazing at what she does. So, and she's already come out to our school. What we've put together for her this year is she's going to train our teachers. It's kind of a morphing of letters, which all of our teachers were trained on, but letters, CKLA, and she's going to morph that into some things that will benefit our teachers as a whole, and so that we're all on the same page. Moving on to math, our Acadience math goal is to measure school-wide data in grades K through 6. We would like to increase our composite scores from 68% proficiency at the end of year last year in 2024 to 72% proficient by the end of year this year, 2025. We are going to look at math in another way, too, and that's using iReady Math, and we will increase those scores in grades K through 6 in numbers and operations from 52% proficiency to 56% proficiency by the end of the year. Again, a reading and math interventionist was hired. We will also do the beginning of middle and end of year Acadience math assessments along with progress monitoring. iReady Math, we are using that as our Tier 2 math intervention program, and we will administer the diagnostic assessments three times a year and look at that data. We're doing a book study with Sarah McAfee, our STEM coordinator for the elementary level this year. It's called Hands Down, Speak Out. And the last area we're going to do is our instructional coach is phenomenal, but she is going into, with a team of people, going into classes, hitting every class twice a month. So 1 week the younger grades get some math games, and the following week the upper grades do, and it kind of trades off like that. And they're working on math fluency games. And this is something new this year. And then the students can check out the games, take them home, play the games with their families. And when they bring the games back, they earn a ticket. And the goal is, at the end of the year, they're going to try and decorate me like an ice cream sundae. Why I agreed to that, I'm not sure. But it's going to be fun. It's all for the kids. And then if you don't mind, Superintendent, if you'd go on to the next one. Thank you. Behavior. We are, unlike the other two schools who are not looking at, they decided to look at the positive. Kudos to you. We are still looking at educators' handbook data and referrals. We just felt like it was a good measurable thing for us to do. So we log all of our office referrals and or minor incidences in Educator's Handbook. And so you can see on the right side, there's our three-year average. Ultimately, our goal would be zero minor incidences and zero office referrals, but we are realistic people and know that that is not going to be the case. But we did want to set the goal of a decrease nonetheless. And then we use Mustang Strong Cards at our school, similar to what Principal Moyle stated about calling home. We do the same thing on positive things that students do. So we'll continue to do that and also reinforce our Mustang Strong values through assemblies and monthly student recognition. And finally, our instructional area is in classroom discussion. And I'll be honest with you, this is a new area for us this year. We've been focused the last several years on teacher clarity, similar to what Principal Moyle stated about how the students will know that they've mastered a certain skill. We've decided to move on from that, and so we're looking at classroom discussion this year. So in there it mentions that we're going to be setting a baseline new this year. So we don't really have data to look at from previous years, but we're going to be using something called TeachFX. And truth be told, we have our first training this Friday. So if I had attended that, I would have more to share with you. But at this point, what I can share with you is essentially it's a way that the teachers can record their lessons. So it'll be a reflective tool for the teachers to look at themselves, but they'll record their lessons, and then it will report back to them kind of a ratio of how much talk time they're doing versus how much discussion is going on in the classroom. And it'll track that information for teachers. And so with having the licenses, they're required to have a minimum of 10 coaching sessions each teacher. And so we'll look at that data as the year goes on. Questions?
I think that's great. I love the evaluating this discussion time versus the teaching time and seeing how that's effective. I think when students are involved and discussing and interested versus a lecture, a lot of learning takes place. So that is phenomenal that you're utilizing that as an evaluation tool.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes, I do have. I'm wondering, why did you decide to use the negative? You said it was just more measurable. Because I'm thinking of, you know, one of the number one ways to change behavior is through peer pressure. That if other kids are doing good things, and, you know, I'm just curious why you chose to do it that way.
So I don't want it to appear that we don't look at positive. So I want to make that clear. We do a PBIS system as well in our school, Mustang Strong Cards. And at the bottom, it states about how many cards we'd like to distribute. For me, I like to look at the data as a whole, so I want to see kind of the balance. So the minor incidences and the major office referrals, how many are going on in the school? Are we making a difference? So we actually look at this data quarterly. We have data meetings at our school, and we look to see how are the numbers in both areas, again, the office referrals and the Mustang Strong Cards. And we're constantly reevaluating. Are things working? What do we need to do differently? We definitely do reinforce positive in multiple ways. Again, we have a student per class who's recognized, actually two students in every class every month at our assemblies, where we find the kindest kid in the class every month for each class. And then also our Mustang Strong actually stands for self-control, team player, respectful, optimistic, noble, and grateful. And so our first month, we introduced self-control, which we just recently did a week ago in our assembly. And so this month, we'll be watching to see which student per class represents the most self-control, and then they'll be recognized in the assembly the following month. And then again, we make phone calls home to parents as well. And just like Principal Moyle said, it's always funny, those move-ins who have not experienced the positive behavior, the phone calls home, it's the funniest thing when you make that first phone call home and introduce yourself to the parent, and they're like, oh, why are you calling? And so when it's a positive, they love and appreciate that. And I think it helps build strong, positive relationships with the families.
And Allison, you said that math literature interventionist has been hired for both of those. Mm-hmm. Does that person just pull a number of kids out of class and work with a group, or how does...
So in our school, we might be a small school, but we all have a lot to do. It's a small school, but we're running wild all day because, you know what, there was a saying when I first came to this district, every child, every day, no matter what it takes. And I still live by that philosophy. And so, yes, the person is hired specifically for literacy and math interventions. I find myself, in fact, I had an alarm going off this afternoon. I was supposed to be in first grade for a group. I pull a kid for reading. So we all have different roles we play. So, yes, the person was hired to work with math and reading interventions, but we have several aides within our building who do similar tasks.
And you're doing it also.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. I don't know, maybe you're doing this also. I went to North Elementary last week, and, you know, they have AIDS. I don't know if you get in the way of AIDS, but this particular day that I visited last Tuesday, a week ago today, well, I guess they had enough AIDS or helps or whatever that the actual teachers went out in the hall and worked with. When I was there with Mrs. Baker, and she was working with her kids plus another teacher's kids on a certain level. I guess the teacher she was working with another group. They are in the hall intervening with the kids that needed help. Well, the aides were teaching the rest of the class for a while, but they were doing interventions also. And you know, I think it's new for them this year, and they're starting it. Anyway, that's just something else going on. So anyway.
You never know where you're going to find yourself every day, right?
Yeah.
It keeps the job interesting.
Yeah. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate this opportunity to be able to go through my goals and stuff with about our school. I'm going to lean in a chair because after two back surgeries, I have to lean a little bit because I'm kind of unbalanced. But so I'm going to do the first two, language arts and mathematics, and my assistant, Melinda Huntsman, is going to do the behavior and instructional goals. We kind of split it up so you don't have to listen to me the whole time. Our first goal is with language arts, and we want 33% of our students that previously scoring below or well below benchmark to go up above that. The 33% are no longer below or well below. We're trying to look at it that way with our Acadians reading. But we also went in and did our RISE goal. We added a RISE goal with our Acadians goal to match up with the district. From our proficiency level is at 49%, and we wanted to bring that up to 51% for the end of the school year. And so we're aligned all together with this. One of the big things we want to push, and superintendents brought this up too, is 120 minutes and 90 minutes for fifth grade for dedicated CKLA program in every classroom of Fidelity. Commitment of every grade level to use Power 20, 30, and 40. So that's where we break into our interventions, where our students are not a ability group, but things that they're challenged with. And so they're split up with the four different classes they have, sometimes five. And they're also with the Title I reading ladies that we have with this. They're broken up into small groups so they can intensify their instruction with their tier two to meet their needs. And then we'll use our Performance Matters platform to vehicle to learn to teach the rigorous level and RISE so we can match those up and get what they need for the RISE testing. And on mathematics, 61% of our K-5 students scored proficient in geometry domain as determined by the end of the year diagnostics as in May last year. Through targeted interventions aligned, we want our kids to with the core standards that you need to from K-5 for 65%, and this is using the iReady. So we want those to bring up for iReady on that. And then our RISE goal is from 50% to 51% to line so the districts can make their goals with that. And the way that we're going to do it is tier one targeting and essential standards tailored to interventions as determined by PLC teams. We empower our PLC teams because they break it up with the Performance Matters. They go in, see what the kids' needs are. They'll do small groups, work with kids individually. They pull us in, all of us on the administrative team and everything. We go in and work with students and do what we need to do to make things happen for students. Just like Melinda said yesterday, you taught fifth grade yesterday, and it was fun. I enjoyed getting back in the classroom. We didn't have a sub show up, so I taught fifth grade all day. And, you know, as an administrator and everything else, and Melinda covered the kids biting and kicking and peeing on the table. What else happened? Yeah, and then we'll continue to review and instruction design alignments based on our PLC data, and instruction is driven by data. One of the neat things is in the spring, we met as a BLT team, which is our leadership team for every grade level with our SPED and everyone. We went through our goals. And then in the fall, or at the beginning of this year, as school started, we met again, and we took what over the summer, as the teachers started going through doing home visits and meeting with students, they come back with more of a need, and they could see that we needed to change our goals a little bit from when we first started the last year to this year, because the students, they got to meet them personally and things like that. So they started to tweak them as a whole faculty. And so our faculty has bought into these as a whole, and they own them. And so it was pretty neat to watch that happen, and they did it themselves, because we started asking probing questions is like, do you think we can reach this? What do you think? You know, are your students going to be able to do this from looking at previous scores? And then when Data Gateway came out, it's even fine-tuned them. So they're stretching themselves, but they've taken ownership of our scores with our math and language arts. So with that, I will start with Melinda, and then I'll stay up here, and you can ask both questions.
Melinda Huntsman, assistant principal. Nice to meet with you today. One of the greatest things about the beginning of the school year is the opportunity to retool, recalibrate, throw some things out that weren't working well, add some things in that are working well, And as Dan mentioned, we really have, after we really believe in the home visits program, and after we met with families over the summer, we could see that we needed to do some adjusting, and we could see precisely what the needs of our community. We have a fantastic relationship with our community, and so we've made some tiny changes that would serve us a little bit better. So I'll first talk about our behavior goal. Last year, we added in a few elements: positive office referrals, increased use of educator's handbook. We started tracking data very precisely in all of the specials that our students are in, our library, PE, computers, because we were feeling like that was where we were seeing some of the behavior situations. And so we've clung to that a little bit this year, and our behavior goal for this year is to re-emphasize, because we've always had a high standard of expectation of behavior at our school, but we've decided to re-emphasize and re-clarify, because we know how powerful teacher clarity is. And so we created a master document that covered different areas of our school, in specials, what is top-notch behavior during assemblies, how do we act in the hallways. These kids are young, they're learning. Some of them don't know how to act in the hallways. How do we act in the lunchroom? How do we model behavior out on the playground? And so we issued this master document to all of our classes, and as needed throughout the year, we're really reminding teachers to go back, revisit this, so that we all know the expectation, and we can build on what we're calling student behavior skills for student success, rather than rules or expectations, because these are solidly skills that kids need to be successful in the classroom. And the less time that we spend on dealing with behavioral issues, more time that we can spend on learning and growing academically. And so we have created a rubric. We're still tracking our behaviors and incidences in our specials, but we've also decided to hone in on assembly behavior. It's very important at our school that we are patriotic and we stand at attention when we do our flag ceremony, and what does that look like? And so we're now tracking our behaviors in each assembly. We do a flag ceremony in every assembly, and we've created a rubric that is geared toward third through fifth and kindergarten through second. And teachers are gauging their own specific class behavior within each assembly. And this lends directly to our PBIS program. And so we're tracking those points, kind of keeping it exciting. Who's earning points, modeling great behavior? And then we extend that through with our PBIS rewards and our PAWS program, so that kids can feel success and know what successful behavior feels like. Sorry, my eyes are really old. So we are also, as I mentioned, incorporating this with our character education and our assemblies that we're doing. We believe we've already set a strong standard for excellent behavior skills. The motto at our school is no excuses. And so we're already seeing great success with that. As far as our instructional goals, the evidence-based practice that we're really focusing on as a faculty this year is called Teacher Estimates of Achievement. And this is focused on using positive, affirmative, corrective responses and feedback. This is communicating with kids at all times, letting them know, where are we, where would we like to go, what are our goals, what are we trying to achieve. Our PLCs are really targeting in on this evidence-based practice. And as part of Hattie's Visible Learning Index, the effect size is 1.62, and this is actually one of the highest impact influences that a teacher can use in a classroom, having positive relationships with students and communicating growth trends, communicating where do we want to go, communicating meaningful targets. Essentially, and the last bullet point on that says, teachers who know their students and build positive relationships with them are more likely to have students achieve at a higher level. So really focusing on positivity and keeping open lines of communication about where we are, where we need to go, and why it's so important to get there. Yeah. And thanks for staying up here with me. Any questions?
I'm just, wow, that was really impressive. And I love the high expectations and where you've put it out to everybody. It's very transparent. Here's what we expect. And it's specific. In the hall, in the lunchroom, if we had one of these little pen things that says high expectations or whatever for our values, you get it.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
thank you. I love the way you're taking proactive approach on that. Well,
just one little question. Tier 2?
Yes.
ELA intervention, what program do you use?
So we use the Power 20-30-40. So mm-hmm. That's when they break it up. They don't use a specific program.
We are using Hegarty and UFLY, and we've got 95%.
This year, and they're learning it and training it.
So yeah.
Whatever fits the kid, the student, is what we try to use.
In our reading lab, we're using UFLY specifically in our reading lab, and seeing some great results with it already.
And our SPED's using 95%. They got it this year. And Spire, we use a little bit, but not as much.
Mostly, though, for tier 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. This is totally off subject.
Steve helps us with that with Title 1. Steve looks us up.
Did you get your new playground?
Yes.
We're waiting for it. We have a slide of death. Because, well, I know this is.
Let us explain.
No, I want to know because I saw the former playground. I want to know if you have the new one.
Yes. So it is we have a partial one because they sent us the wrong one.
Okay.
And so our PTA president called them and they said, oh no, we sent what the orders. She proved they were wrong. So now they've got to send a couple other parts to the slide. And so she got in a fight with them. She won. So they're on their way. We're just waiting for that. So we have a little short one that's
boarded off. And the kids are calling it the slide of death because you just cannot go down.
It's just, like, nobody can use it. It's just until we get the other. But yes, that's all done.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. And so when we get it all fenced in, we won't have to replace it ever again, right?
Okay, thank you, and Melinda. My wife says hi to you. So yes, she was able to work over there in Enoch for a little while. So
that was before I got here.
I know.
She's great.
She can always come back, though.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, fiddlers.
Are you going downstairs? The mic is locked out. Let me go open the door for
you. Hi. Thanks for having me. My name is Michelle Hall, and I'm the principal of Fiddlers, and I'm glad to be here. I have old eyes, so I put mine on two screens, so that's why I couldn't read my print anymore. But like everybody else, we have some academic goals, and I'd like to start with those. We divide our academic goals into lower grade and upper grade just because our assessments are different for both. And so we found it hard to measure the success of all students with just a test that fourth and fifth grade took or whatnot. So our language arts goal, at the end of last year, we had 67% of our students, K through 3, meet their pathways of progress. Pathways is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's where they go in, they take a reading test, and then they have an estimated goal as to where they should be at the end of the year based on where they're at. And so it's not necessarily that the kids are proficient, but the kids are making the typical growth that somebody who was on their level where they were at would start and would end. And we want those kids to be meeting those goals. And so we had 67% of our students meet that. We would really like that to be 72% by the end of next year, which is a pretty high standard. But we believe that we can do that. We also have our fourth and fifth graders who at the end of last year had 57% on the RISE test, and we would really like that to be 60% in language arts. Some of the ways we intend on getting there, we had a whole list we created. This is just a few things. Specifically intentional planning and instruction during the tier 1 and tier 2 times. You'll see later that this is our instructional goal. A lot of times people, our teachers, will get so bogged down in a lesson or they'll pick it up and they'll just read the lesson. And we found that if there's holes in a lesson, most of the time it's because there wasn't intentional planning. Like, did you consider the kids in your class? Did you consider the standards you're teaching? Or are you just simply reading through a lesson? And so our teachers have committed to be more intentional in their planning and in their instruction time. We also want to make sure we're tracking those pathways of progress and that we're looking at them very specifically. And at every 6 weeks, do we need to readjust some of our interventions and making sure that our students set those goals and are meeting them. The other really important thing was to make sure that our students knew what the goals were. It's really hard to meet a goal if you don't know what it is, and so making sure that our students are aware what the goals are, and then making sure we're teaching the, you know, their TKLA with fidelity, making sure we're checking our scope and sequence and our pacing guide, and we're doing everything to be on track with the program and with our curriculum. In math, we have been doing math interventions for a couple of years now. We wanted to kind of fine-tune it, but at the end of last year, 79% of our students met their Cadence Pathways of Progress goal, and by the end of this year, we would like that to be 81%. Cadence in math was new to us last year, and so it's been kind of nice to have a measure in math where students could set goals and be tracked. And then 63% of our students were proficient on the Math Rise assessment. We would really like that to be 65%. Our students actually do quite well in math, and our Rise scores show that. Some of the ways that we have planned on working on that is, again, making sure all of our kids are tested, that they know where their pathways are, make sure those pathways are set. And then what we've done is we've tested all of our kids. Anyone who wasn't proficient on the test, we then did a diagnostic on to see why they weren't proficient. So when we do put them in intervention groups, we're actually targeting the holes that they have, not just putting them in there because they're not proficient. We want to know why. We want to make sure that we have our curriculum and our CFAs, or our common assessments, that they're actually measuring what we want them to measure. And again, that intentionally planning to intervene with a focus on those students who do have holes. We intend on giving a benchmark test at least once per topic and making sure that math is part of a lot of their day, including transition times and other parts of the day. And then the next slide. We have been tracking behavior in Educator's Handbook for a long time, and it was really eye-opening to us. One of the big questions about the things we tracked were they measuring what we really wanted them to? And our goal for a long time was to get rid of some of the behaviors or make sure they declined. We found that wasn't working for us because we were never really sure if everybody got logged or if behaviors, so we didn't know if it was accurate information. And we are excited when there's lots of logs because it's lots of information and we know that people are logging. And so we've kind of turned a focus on, again, the positive and making sure that we are able to celebrate those things. Last year we introduced a ticket system where our students could work on one of three goals: respectful, responsible, or safe. The key to the ticket, though, that we found is if we gave a ticket to a child, they were then responsible for bringing it to somebody in our building, whether it was the secretary or me or a behavior coach, and explaining why they got the ticket, rather than, because sometimes a lot of the tickets would go out in the morning, oh, everyone brought back their homework, they all got a ticket. But for a child to be able to articulate why they have a ticket was important to us, and for them to understand what role or what rule were they following and how did they get that. So what they would do is they'd bring us a ticket, we put it in a bag or a box, and we draw several out every day, and then we announce them on the morning announcements. And we were able to give out at least one positive ticket to every child last year. We gave out about 2,500. We would like to increase that to 3,000 and at least have every child get two. There's at least two things every child could be celebrated for during the year. The other little change that we wanted to make is to track better who was getting tickets so that we could really catch those who hadn't. So we set up a system in our computers to make sure we track. And then we're focusing every month on a specific rule, like this month is respectful. We are giving examples about being respectful. And it's really nice when I get a ticket and I read it over the intercom in the morning. Johnny was helped clean up trash. It helps give all the other kids ideas of what they could do to be more respectful. And then the important thing this year is we want to make sure that those tickets go home so that the parents are also getting them. So every day, lots of tickets go home to parents with positive things that they've done. And then as I mentioned before, we would like 100% of our teachers to be practicing explicit instruction. There's a specific model we would really like to use. It's called I Do, We Do, You Do, You All Do. It's really great teaching. It's good modeling, but it does take some planning, and we want them to be able to measure that by some self-evaluations and something called micro-teaching and observation. We are asking that every teacher, I feel like our building has some of the best teachers in the world, and that we could learn a lot from each other, so we're making it possible for all teachers to go observe these teachers, find something you want to learn, go observe, and Mrs. Hepworth and I are taking their class while they do this. And the other expectation is that they do video themselves and watch it and do an observation on themselves, because I think that's really informative and they can learn a lot by doing that. So those are some of the things we're focusing on this year. Questions?
Just a comment. I love that you're having them, when they get a ticket, come and articulate that to you. I think that is so cool to be able to have them come back and say, this is why I got that ticket. I think that leads them to tell their parents at home why they got it. You know, it's not just something, a little prize or something they received, but they're articulating the why. I think that's a great resource, great tool.
Sometimes they do come up and say, I don't know, but the teachers do write on the back. So if they do say, I don't know, I can read the back and say, well, did you? And they say, yes, I don't know.
What's micro-teaching?
Micro-teaching is... It's the ability to videotape yourself and to watch and observe, like to micro, like and analyze, I would say, is probably a better word for it, to look at it and see that, you know, what you're doing well and what you're, you know, what you need to improve on.
Like analyzing game film
from a
sport.
Yeah.
It's really breaking it down to its smallest parts and being able to actually, you know, that's why it's micro instead of macro. Where, you know, you're just trying to recall how the lesson went, you can actually zero in on every individual part and analyze it.
It's kind of like listening to your voice message that you leave, and you go, oh, I said 500 times. Yeah.
Mrs. Hall, this is totally off topic, but it's still on fiddlers.
Okay.
Chinese people, teachers out there, they there for so many years each? Is that...
Well, a lot of their availability depends on what visa they're on and what visa they're able to get. But I'll tell you, if they could all be there for eternity, I would keep them all. They are that good.
I sat in the fifth grade Chinese teacher's class a couple of years ago, whenever it was, and she wanted to stay there for a long time. She was doing some type of science experiments with those kids. Whole darn thing was in Chinese. And this was science stuff. And they're not messing around.
No, they're not.
It was a very memorable, you know, experience in that class that day. She wasn't dinging around.
And I tell my teachers when they go to observe, I said, don't discount observing our Chinese teachers because you think you're not going to understand them. You will walk away having learned something, and they do quite an amazing job. They have to.
Yeah, they're good.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And thank all of you schools for coming and talking through your goals. It is great for us to be able to hear the good work that you're doing and the efforts that you're putting forward, and we recognize that. Thank you for the time. At this point, we'll go ahead and move to item number two, and this is the 2025-26 school calendar draft.
Okay, I think I'll say just a couple words, and then I'll turn it over to Roy, who's done the bulk of the work. Just appreciate Roy and Monica putting the time and energy together to try and figure out how do we, with all the constraints that we have and expectations from the community, how do we put together a calendar that would, you know, come as close as possible to meeting what people want. It really is impossible to get everything in there that everybody wants, but they've done a great job, so I'll turn it over to Roy.
Just to echo what the superintendent has said, trying to meet everybody's needs is pretty much impossible. One thing that we've done we're trying to collect feedback, and so we've put this on the agenda for the community councils, all the schools. We feel like that's probably the right way to get feedback. Those are elected councils. Individual parents can go to that community council and share their give input, and then we'll be collecting that input over the next few weeks, and we'll bring this back to the board in the end of October.
We've also shared this with the ICEA, the Teacher Association, so they can provide feedback as well.
And thank you for getting it to the community councils. I know Perwin had this at their high school community council just yesterday, I believe, and great getting information out to parents, great discussions. Great involvement that way. So thank you for getting it out early and getting it to all of those different groups for feedback.
Do you have any questions? It's fairly similar to what we've had over the last few years. Go ahead.
I presume that the state legislature or the state whoever has allowed to go to the 176 days of instruction. However that came about. Is that correct, or how did that happen?
Yeah, that's still the statute. Yeah.
Looks like it's going to be permanent and maybe not go back to 180 like it was for decades.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that the state legislature that makes that decision? Or
the state legislature does. That's part of the statute, that the four PD days can count as instructional days. Or teachers prep for those things, and that's where you get to 180. But to your point, that's my understanding, Jeff. So,
but the kids aren't there on the PD days.
Nope.
They're doing whatever.
That's correct.
And thank you for being cognizant of that. For instance, we could have them go back on the 23rd of December. However, that would be a very inefficient day. And so a matter of getting days versus getting efficient days, I appreciate the way that the schedule is laid out so that the time is well spent. And one also other comment is thank you for the teacher days at the start of the semester or start of the school year to allow the teachers. They put in so much time getting their classrooms ready, getting their items together. So thank you for being cognizant of that and having those days accounted for.
Right.
In the calendar.
There was another... Megan, I don't know if you had a comment about SUU's break. Or
I did. I looked up the projected calendar, so I appreciate that we aligned that March break mm-hmm. with the SUU's spring break.
Yeah.
That's three full days, which is great, and I think that they want that.
Well, except
and
the teachers.
The thanks really goes to SUU.
Yeah, the
they
teachers
are the ones that made the adjustment to align
thank
with
you.
Us.
Yeah. Thank you very much, SUU. It does allow the teachers 2 days, just not.
It gives the teachers 2 days.
They're the grade
parent teacher conference.
They're the grade days, so it's
12th
really just
13th. Yeah,
it's taking the place of the, it's the time that they spend for parent-teacher conference, SEP, and CCR week. Basically, they're spending the equivalent of 2 work days extra in the evenings meeting with parents and so on. So
do they get those days?
Those days are off.
Those days are off
for the teachers.
The teachers are able to take that Thursday, Friday.
Yes.
Awesome. Also,
not the Wednesday. The Wednesday is a PD day.
The Wednesday is a full day of prep. I see that. I just for the public, it just feels, and I know it's the way the calendar lies, but the students starting on the 6th of January just seems, and I know it's just the way the calendar falls, but it just feels on this January 6th. Yeah, that just seems way into January after Christmas. So it is, which is, I know it's just the way it falls, but I think that will grab some parents' attention. But I looked at all the dates. I thought it was really well done, and I have had at least one or 2 people reach out on the calendar in the community, and just I try to emphasize with them a lot of it just has to do with how the dates fall every few years, and sometimes it just gets ugly and there's just nothing else we can do, but this looks good. So first thing I looked at was SU schedule, so thank you.
You're welcome.
One other thing to point out, we do a 190-day contract for teachers. And a very good problem to have is where do you put those days? We put the bulk of them, obviously, before school starts because we think that's where it's needed the most. The 2nd of January, that Friday, we find that most teachers will spend some time during the Christmas vacation anyway in their classrooms. Of course, teachers could take a vacation day that day if they didn't want to come in, but we think that's going to be quite popular with a lot of teachers. There may be a couple that don't like it, but those can take that day off.
So, Superintendent, if they come in during the holiday to do their teacher work day and not on the 2nd, do they still have to take the 2nd off, or is that a flex day that really can be utilized?
We really try not to do flex days because that gets into quite a mess really fast. So I would prefer that question not be asked. So if we could just kind of pretend that was not asked, that would be good.
Edit the. The one other thing about the contract days too, with ESSER money, and maybe you're going to touch on this, but ESSER money leaving us, so the Iron Strong Conference, we've had some good feedback about that. That we're still doing the Iron Strong Conference, and it's part of the 190-day contract.
Okay.
So teachers are getting paid for the Iron Strong Conference.
And that also saves us from having to try and figure out how to pay those that extra day, which we were doing because we had ESSER. So it's really, I think it's a good plan.
Just like a little bit bigger memorial break before they have to come back for their last full day of inspiration before they take off.
Right.
Take off, I use that loosely.
Yep. Again, from year to year, there's the way we're trying to structure things, it's hard depending on the calendar, so happy to take any feedback. It's just sometimes it doesn't feel like there's a lot of flexibility as we try to plan when we look at accommodating, but I'm hoping that parents will go to their community council meetings and give any feedback. I know there's always concerns about Washington County spring break and sports and all that, and I don't know what to say. We have a 2-week break in Christmas, but that's not a 2-week break in Christmas if your kid's in athletics. Just doesn't work that way. It's a 5-day moratorium during the Christmas break, and that's not accommodating to families. It's not. That's the UHSAA, and I just don't have a good answer for that.
Now, the Armstrong Conference, is that required?
It's not required. They would. It is a contract day, and so if they didn't go to the Armstrong Conference, they could take a personal day.
Yeah.
So, modified required? Can I say it that way? It is part of their contract,
yeah, yeah.
But then if they didn't want to go, they could take a day.
Yeah.
Was there a reason we couldn't align the fall break as well, since it's just a couple days off? Was there a reason you moved that? Because SUU is 14th and 15th, looks like, of October, and we are, yeah. Oh, you're looking at me.
Mm-hmm. This is my deer hunting face.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's usually centered around the what we call the protein harvest.
And so you and SUU can't get all together on that?
Yeah, SUU is welcome.
SUU's can do it during the deer hunt.
Sorry, I'm being a little bit sarcastic, Tiffany. But, yeah, it's centered around the fall break for the traditions that fill our community.
Okay.
Yeah.
So SU joined us on spring, but not in fall.
That's correct.
And that's the same as this year. And if I recall, when I started at SU 14 years ago, we actually got opening day of the deer hunt.
They did. Opening day of the deer hunt was off.
It's shifted at SU quite a bit.
And all my guys take that day off, so.
We can.
Yep. Harvest holiday.
So, will we be changing the name on the calendar to deer hunt?
Harvest holiday.
I'm happy to.
Yeah,
me,
it did.
We'll probably stick with
the hunt
fall
in
break.
Red October. That's what I. Okay. There you go. Thanks. Any other? Just send people my way if they have questions. So
we'll vote on this.
And Monica, too. She's
a
big help with this,
kudos
to her.
Will you review any feedback in October at our work meeting and then vote at our regular meeting?
That's the intent.
Correct.
Okay. Unless there's not really any feedback, and then we'll probably just put it on the regular agenda. Oh, yeah.
Yes, no, yeah.
Yeah, we'll
so
definitely.
Any feedback? Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead and move to our next item, and this is a policy item, policy 726, fund drives.
Okay, this Todd requested that this be on not because we're making a change. It's just because of the new legislation. We have to review this policy every year, even if we don't make a change. So we're only bringing it up because you're going to see it on the action agenda for next week, not because we're suggesting a change, but we just need it to be the same as it was. We just need the board to revote on it again next week. And for whatever reason, the legislature decided of all the policies under the sun, this is the one that you have to vote on every single year, no matter what. So,
okay, next item on our agenda is policy 862, kindergarten student toilet training.
Yeah, and this is why we have an elementary director, is to take toilet training policy for us and help us understand that.
And we took it to a new level. So this basically reflects the law that we're required to follow. And legislation requires that our kindergarten students are trained prior to coming to kindergarten. And so this outlines the process for that. And all parents, when they register their kindergarten students, have to read through what it means and sign whether or not their child is trained or not. So we've been doing that, but we did not have a policy. And so We are also required to have a policy in place. The first part just talks about definitions of what it means, accidents, how it ties to enrollment, and then also toward the end, addressing needs of students who are not trained, and especially students that are in an IEP or a 504 plan that have some type of medical diagnosis that that results in issues with being potty trained. And then also how we're required to interact with the parents. The goal is not to remove kids permanently, but get them back as soon as we can if we run into issues with that. But anyway, I'm assuming you had a chance to glance over that. Are there any questions about this?
It is a brand new policy, so.
I'm just glad it's not a brand new curriculum, so
yes.
We have to train on. So.
Yes, this is easier.
Yes.
I guess the only thing I would ask is there anything that you foresee that could be an issue with this? Or like, because you're very specific in what it means to be toilet trained. And have you seen that as a problem in kindergarten? Like they can't get dressed or they can't tend to personal hygienic needs?
Some, yeah. Yeah. And we've had to work with some parents. I've had some visits with parents. And so, yes, it has been with a few students, yeah.
Steve, have we had more of a problem with full-day kindergarten now?
I don't know. There are some that it's easier to, but it really doesn't have anything to do with the training. It's just that some kids, they try to outlast, you know, and so if they're trying to outlast, if that's their methodology, then full-day kindergarten is hard. And so one of the methods that we would work with parents, if that's the case, let's bump them to half-day until they can work with their child. And we provide information for them and coordinate some things with the parents so that we can get them back into full-day. So, but that is the case sometimes, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and move to our next policy, policy 856, dispensing medication at school.
And with this one, we with the toilet training, we appreciate Steve, you know, putting all the work in to develop that policy. He's done a great job with that, and just like with that one, we have Tiffany Johnson, who's our head nurse at our school district. She's done a great job working through this policy as well, and I know that Kevin has been involved with that also, so come on up. Let's make sure Tiffany has a microphone. Thank you.
Okay, so there's a few. So first off, I'm trying to combine four policies into one, because they all deal with medication administration. So there's a lot of like grammatical changes and like flow changes that I've made, which I haven't changed any of the wording of the policy on those things. Sorry, I'm out of breath. Ran up the stairs. But also included in this is further down, I think it's number 9, sorry. And those changes, like, it's updating the forms we use, and so just so it's all up to date. So 9.2, there was a House Bill 468 passed, and it's adrenal insufficiency rescue medication. And so we needed to include that in our medication policy. That right there just says that the nurses will train volunteers to give the medication, and also that they'll not be held liable for administering the medication as long as they do it how they're trained to give it. And there's a copy of the healthcare plan form, a link to that form that gives more details about it. And then number 10, So all of that red is just bringing the other policies in, and it was just a lot of repetition. So it's just taking out a lot of that. And then here, 10 was our Tylenol policy, and the way the policy was or is right now is that we can give one dose of Tylenol per student per year, and that's it. That's all the over-the-counter medications we can give. And in, I've explored a few other districts, and they have additional standing order medications that they can give. They can give Tylenol as needed. They can give ibuprofen. They can give allergy medication. And so this is to do away with our Tylenol policy of just giving one dose per student per year, and opening it up so we can give a few more medications to hopefully keep kids in school. So if they have bad allergies, their parents don't have to come and take them and give them allergy medication, but we can give that at school. And they're standing orders, which means a doctor, Dr. Craig Nielsen, he's our contracting physician, he has approved certain medications that are over-the-counter medications and that he feels are okay to be given. So he signed off on them, and then we would call parents prior to giving any medication. We'd have a written consent from the parent, and that's all in this section 10. We'd have a written consent. Well, it'd be electronic, so we'd get it immediately so that parents can give permission for us to give the medication, and then we could give it in the schools. I hope that made sense. But you'll have time to review it, and we can bring it up next week. So,
okay, thank you for all the work on that. That's a lot of effort getting all of those policies combined into one cohesive policy. So thank you for pulling the work together and then getting it into alignment with current legislation. So we're meeting those standards as well. Any questions from the board?
Is this considered a first reading today?
No, we will have our official first reading tomorrow. Yeah,
won't be approved till October then.
Yeah, unless you don't see anything and we supersede our standing board rules. But yes, it will be a first reading. So
great, thank you.
Okay, closed session.
A quick question about the fund policy.
Yeah.
The fund drive policy. Is that reviewed? I know we're reviewing it because this is the one we have to review every year. But at what level? Is there another specification that has to be reviewed, like at the school level, or it's just the board has to review it?
Yeah, this part is for the policy. It's just the board. It's in conjunction with some of the items that you've had over the last couple months with, we had to have that public hearing,
mm-hmm.
Where people could weigh in, and we had to make those changes to the spin plans. So anyway, all of that is also part of that legislation that occurred. So anyway. At the school level, they do review it every single year, and they make sure that the amounts that are listed are what they expect to see, unless it's a yearbook. If it's a yearbook, apparently we charge something else sometimes. But then we fix it. Anyway, we had a little bit of a hiccup with the yearbook charge, but we got that worked out.
Yes. Okay. We do not have a closed session tonight. And so with that, thank you, all board members, for the time that you put into the work with the, I know it's record time getting out of here. But I'm going to talk for another 25 minutes or half hour. No. thank you, though, for the time that you put into the board and to our kids. You know, this boils down to the kids in Iron County, the education in Iron County, and thank you for being solution-oriented And it is great to work with good board members. While we don't always agree or see eye to eye on every topic, I think it is wonderful that we're able to work through and come up with our best efforts for our kids in Iron County. So thank you for that. And with that, we are adjourned.